Welcome to yet another installment of Chronicles of Mitem, the thrilling adventure novel where humanity battles the continuous challenges of their environment, facing one obstacle after another. Get ready to dive straight back into the action. No recap, no time to waste. Enjoy the ride.
Detailed report. Report name, Team Yuno. Entry number 1, part 2 of 12. Day 2. Forest Instincts. Hours passed, and the team lost all sense of time as the relentless howling of the wolves reverberated through the forest, a haunting backdrop to their arduous journey. The wolves, unknowingly, had cast a sinister shadow over the forest, curbing the movements of other creatures that might have crossed paths with the weary team. What the wolves failed to comprehend about humans was that when faced with a life-threatening challenge, they could transcend their physical limits for survival. With unwavering determination and a single-minded focus on their objective, they walked for hours, fatigue masked by their sheer will to endure. As the wolves' howls echoed, it was as though their predatory presence had imposed an unsettling stillness on the forest, disrupting the natural rhythm of its inhabitants. The team pressed on, each step a testament to their resilience in the face of adversity. The terrain began to shift beneath their feet, transitioning from the plush moss of the spunnies' nesting area to a forest floor carpeted with dry leaves and dense thickets. It was a subtle change in the landscape, but it marked the end of one challenge and the onset of another. Toby, struggling to maintain control over his mind, muscles, and nervous system, lagged behind the rest of the team. The effects of the slime weighed on him, a burden that gnawed at his psyche. He couldn't help but dwell on the regret that had brought him to this dire situation, his impulsive act of abandoning the team when unity was most crucial. He felt isolated and used in the worst way, a stark contrast to the camaraderie he witnessed among his companions. While they pressed forward, lending a helping hand to one another as they navigated the treacherous terrain, Toby was unable to offer the same support. The nature of the slime forbade physical contact, leaving him isolated in his struggle. All he could do was watch as his teammates extended their hands to each other, offering support and encouragement whenever their legs grew weak. During those painful moments of rest, the team cast a watchful eye back at Toby, who struggled to catch up. This was a unique luxury Toby had been denied. They weren't resting simply because they were tired. They were waiting for Toby. He watched with a complex mix of gratitude and frustration as his companions reclaimed the little energy they'd lost, knowing that as soon as he arrived, they'd be ready to move again, offering him no respite. Despite the restrictions imposed by the unforgiving slime, Toby's determination burned even brighter. He understood the unpayable debt he owed to his teammates. Despite the disruptions he had caused, they had never considered abandoning him, and he was resolute in his determination to transform from a liability into an asset, determined to prove himself in the days to come. Timon, we're in dire straits, and Toby's condition is getting worse. Look at him back there, all quiet and gross. Plus, we need to prioritize securing water and food. This is about more than just our mission. It's about sustaining our strength for the journey ahead. Ben, I agree. But we need to tread carefully with the vegetation here. We can't afford any mistakes. I've read somewhere that some signs of determining edible plants are their heart-shaped leaves, but we need a diverse diet to stay nourished. Mr. Major, right. A balanced diet includes protein. We've got to set snares along game trails. I'm not sure about you guys, but that's something I know how to do well. We've been hearing small, game-like animals around, but they move too fast to see. There could be rabbits and squirrels around. Who really knows? With patience and strategy, we can secure meat to aid our recovery. Scott, squirrels and rabbits? The last rabbit we saw was a monster. This is an alien planet. Not because some of the plant life might be like Earth gives us the right to start thinking that the animals are the same. In addition to sustenance, we can't ignore the potential threats. This forest harbors diverse wildlife, some of which could be dangerous. Our alertness, observation, and readiness for confrontation are non-negotiable. Ben, guys, we keep worrying about food, but that is not important. To be honest, it is more risky than not eating. We can go at least a week without food, as mentioned in old history and survival books always said. All we need to focus on is getting water. Plus, Why waste time on the uncertainty of plants? Timon mentioned before we entered the forest that if it's colorful, assume it's poisonous. Does that apply to fruits and berries or just flowers? I need to know. Look at that plant right there. It looks like wild kale. I know they're safe to eat and packed with vitamins, fiber, and probably some other shit like manganese and blah blah. They'll boost our immune systems, which is essential in this situation. But can my earth knowledge even be dependable here? Moreover, we need protein. Mr. Major, for securing protein, we're going to need to build effective snares. Small game can be elusive, but the traps must be designed for success. Scott, listen, all that is important is that we can't forget to keep a lookout for tracks and signs of wildlife. I know Timon is trying to create a mental map, and he's using the stones to create a trail of the path we've traveled. I'm not sure how he's using the stones to find a water source, but I have to trust that he knows what he's doing. I've glimpsed small rodents scurrying from time to time, but whenever I go to investigate, they leave no trace behind, at least nothing that I know to pay attention to at this moment. The ability to evolve to your environment by understanding how important it is not to leave a trace or a trail for survival is incredible. These animals are skilled, and it's actually frightening. What kinds of predators are forcing the weaker to evolve like this, and what does this mean for us, Mr. Major? Whatever it is we are faced with, as humans, we will prevail. Ben, this ain't VRTV, this is the real world. Humans evolved after countless losses of life over periods of generations. Let's just focus on what to do when we find water. Boiling or purifying the water is non-negotiable to avoid waterborne diseases. Mr. Major, we just need to keep pushing and keep an eye out on Toby. He's strong, but he's dying. If securing a meat source is hard, plant is the only other option. For starters, we need to find out if the wild kale is edible. Toby's in bad shape and he could help us all. I don't want to force it on him, but perhaps he'd be willing to give it a try. Ben, I understand the urgency, but I can't agree with using Toby as a test subject. It's ungodly and wrong to put someone's life at risk like that. There must be another way, one that doesn't involve compromising our ethics. Mr. Major, compromising our ethics? He compromised our safety and our lives. I'm not suggesting we force him. It would have to be his choice. Toby's strong and he'd do it for the team. We just need to approach it with care and respect for his decision. Ben, this isn't right. I can't condone using a person, especially someone as unwell as Toby, to test something so uncertain. There's too much at stake here, and we should explore other options first. Mr. Major, don't you believe in your skills and knowledge? You said this was wild kale and it might be edible. What are the odds of it killing us? Won't it be less than 50%? Ben, no, I don't believe in my knowledge of plants on a fucking alien planet. Listen, it's not up to me at the end of the day, but this will be a manipulation of his mind if you do this. Mr. Major, I don't like the idea either, but desperation can cloud judgment. Maybe I'm wrong, who knows? But we should see if we can find a safer way to determine which plants are edible. We have to respect Toby's well-being and our principles. Ben, trust me. If we go down this path, we might find ourselves fighting each other along with the forest and its contents. We'll figure this out without compromising our morals. Toby's well-being and our principles must guide us even in the toughest of times. This is just the beginning. It will get more tough as we move forward. Timon. All right, calm down. There's no need for you two to get worked up. Something might hear us. Save that energy for running away when we need to. Now that we've discussed our approach, let's start by looking for those heart-shaped leaves. We can gather nuts and berries when we come across them and feed them to any small game that we'll capture alive. Ben. Agreed. We'll carefully inspect the vegetation for what we think is safe. We will have to find the ideal place to hunt, which will dig into our time spent in the forest. The snares that we'll build will have to be monitored. They won't yield results immediately, so we'll have to rely on whatever we can get our hands on. Mr. Major. True, we can't underestimate the wildlife. As we search for sustenance, we must remain vigilant for any signs of danger. Scott, from what I've seen, your skills might be needed here. Scott, I'm on it. I'll keep a sharp eye out for tracks and other signs of wildlife. We can't afford any surprises out here. Timon, we should also discuss gathering edible insects if we can find them. They're a valuable protein source, and I've never heard of poisonous bug meat. Mr. Major, if you never heard of it, then it's because you ain't listening. I know I was military and that we're built differently. But your mother must have been a man if you think that I, Mr. Major, am going to eat a bug. Do I look like a blasted animal? Ben. Well, now that you mention it, Mr. Major. Shut up, Toby. Scott. Toby didn't say anything, and he can't even speak anymore.
Leave that man alone. Ben, listen. Insects can be our lifeline, but we must be cautious about identification. We don't want to ingest anything harmful like bugs, plants, or animals. Let us be smart about it. Once we can put some fire under whatever we want to ingest, I think it's okay. Scott, don't worry. I'll look for signs of insect and animal activity while learning to set up the snares with Mr. Major. I hope we can find some big, juicy larvae or beetles if we're lucky. I want to see you guys squirm. In case our foraging and trapping take longer than expected, let's discuss building a makeshift shelter. It'll protect us from the elements and any unexpected rain. Timon, shelter's a good call. We need a fallback plan, especially with Toby's condition. Ben, hey, Scott, quick question. I'm thinking about water. Could we consider following the animal tracks if you do come across them? If we can manage to get to fresh water, we could get some fish and mussels in streams or rivers. Mr. Major, good idea, Ben. Mussels are a reliable source of good food. Boiling the water is key, so I'll handle making a fire from now on. Ben, actually, fuck all this noise. I'm tired of talking and walking. The way this hunger just hit me, I'm reporting somebody for abuse. I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, and I also want some dick and vagina with a side of titus. When I get back to that field of over 2,000 people, I'm definitely cheating. Then again, if I follow prison rules, it's not cheating, right? It's just prison. My family will understand. They know how much I love filling up on sex. It even gets rid of my gas sometimes. I'm so fucking hungry.
Toby, why are we whispering? Mr. Major, shut up. Toby, why did Ben say titties like that? Mr. Major, I said, shut up, Toby. This is forest shit. That's what we do. Talk softly in dark bushes. Ben, that's gay, by the way. Just wanted you to know. Timon, are we gonna stop yelling? Inside voices, please, and thank you.
Scott, okay, enough of that. We have a multi-pronged approach. Forage for edible plants, set snares for protein, keep an eye out for insect sources, build a shelter, and locate a water source. It's all about balance and adaptability. I know we can do this. We are the smartest Earth has to offer. Just from the look of all the people who arrived on the planet that I've talked to, I can tell that the world we build will be better than the world we left behind. At least 60 faces among the 3,000 people looked impressive. If they can survive till we make it back to Earth, I know they are going to be kings and queens with unrivaled influence and strength. Mr. Major.
Yeah, speaking of strong, a monk and another guy were sizing us up as we disembarked. Besides the appointed general, those two were strong. Really strong.
Timon.
Shh. As they walked and talked, their human limits became painfully clear once again. Exhaustion and aches gripped their bodies, and Timon could see that they were on the brink of breaking. All five of them were right at the edge of their final limit, and Timon could see it and quickly decided to issue a rest period. It wasn't a life or death dash, so there was no need to push them this hard. And this rest was a desperate need, like a lifeline thrown to drowning sailors. Scott and Mr. Major, shadows of their former selves, sped up and began scouring the alien terrain for a good place for refuge. After some time, their eyes, sunken and weary, eventually fell upon a tall kapok-like tree with large enough roots that twisted into a protective C-shape. There, in that new eerie sanctuary, they made their stand for survival. With tired, trembling hands, they draped their slime-soaked garments near the entrance as a barrier. Ben and Timon worked together, collecting branches and moss for bedding, ensuring their team would have some comfort during the night. Mr. Major focused on setting up snares, a crucial task to secure food for the group. Scott, on the other hand, gathered an assortment of materials, including vines, pieces of sticks, stones, and bones, presumably to be used for various purposes. As the group dedicated themselves to these tasks, the mysterious whispers of the forest seemed to entwine with their exhaustion. The forest's eerie lullabies sounded like the creaking of trees, the wind blowing through the canopy leaves, and the singing of nightbirds. As it played, it began to envelop each member of Team Uno. Despite the unknown dangers lurking in this alien world, the embrace of slumber eventually overtook them, offering a temporary escape from the haunting uncertainties of this enigmatic planet. But in a moment that shattered the tranquility of their respite, the forest was cleaved asunder by a blood-curdling scream, an ancient cry that slashed through the silence like a vengeful spirit. Panic ignited like wildfire among the exhausted team. Their hearts raced like wild horses on the brink of a stampede. Adrenaline coursed through their veins like a surging river. Eyes snapped open, pupils dilating in anticipation of the ominous enigma that had violated their uneasy rest. The very forest, it seemed, recoiled in fear as though even the land itself shivered in response to this sudden intrusion, an omen of dread that gripped them all. As the screech reverberated through the ancient woods, an ominous transformation swept over the once peaceful forest. Shadows deepened as the atmosphere got brighter, and the dormant creatures lurking in the night stirred with newfound vigor as they ran through the forest away from the creature, all while triggering the snares Mr. Major and Scott set. The unsettling tension that hung in the air was heavy with fear, so much so if one was to look clearly, one could see a slight shimmer in the air, a distortion of emotions. Standing at the entrance of their secured refuge, they watched as small and big creatures native to the planet ran by at top speeds. The way they looked, weaving among the trees, was all a blur, but their sizes varied, and it left the onlookers speechless as the round rumbled in the animal's rampage. Timon and Mr. Major exchanged a glance, their eyes mirroring the shared dread that hung heavily in the air. The echoes of the screech continued to resonate, casting an ever-deepening pall of foreboding over their already precarious situation. Mr. Major squinted into the shadows. "What the fuck was that?" Toby. "Forest shit." Ben, ever analytical, chimed in. "From the sound of the screech and the volume, it could be from the bird family, perhaps a truck-sized one." "A truck size? So this planet has dinosaurs too?" Mr. Major mused, his tone laced with both wonder and trepidation. Timon, grappling with exhaustion, interjected, "Why are they flying around at night, though? Something doesn't feel right." Ben, "What doesn't feel right? Does it feel alien to you, Mr. Leader?" "Listen, I can't begin to tell you how tired I am," Timon confessed. "I have no idea if I got enough sleep, and my crazy, chiseled body is so sore I'm not even sure what to do with it. I can't even imagine how Toby must be feeling right now. We need to relocate." Ben, "What's the point? We might as well stay here. With a monster like that lurking over this crater forest, the others back in the open field settlement have no way of defending against it. We might not have anywhere to return to, so let's just give up." Mr. Major, "Listen, I don't know about you, but birds are ruthless creatures. And to be that big, as Ben suggested, it's a problem if it breaches the forest canopy to forage for food under here. I don't think it's trying to land or hunt in this area," Timon analyzed. "The sound is traveling and echoing in a weird way. I can even hear remnants within the trees." "The trees? Are you talking about the same trees with carbon fiber within?" Ben sought to clarify. "Whatever this is, after it jolted the forest alive, the animals might be even more on edge, and the wolves might even return," Timon explained. "I think we should wait around here for a bit, but we shouldn't stay too long in case the animals decide to come back to the area or turf." Mr. Major nodded approvingly. "That's a pretty good idea. With the small opening, it's safe to use as a shelter and easy to defend if anything tries to get in. And if we can mask our smell, anything that could track us would be led here and not follow the team." Ben, grappling with the harsh reality of their situation, couldn't help but lament, "That's a gross idea. This is a gross existence. I miss my wife and husband. Why me, Lord? Why not Toby alone?" In the stillness that followed the terrifying screech, the chaotic stampede of forest creatures and their talk, a heavy silence enveloped the team. It was during this haunting pause that a stark realization descended upon them like an icy shroud. They were utterly alone in this strange and transformed world. The protective presence of the wolves, which had offered some comfort and security, had vanished into the obscurity of the night, leaving the team to grapple with a profound sense of isolation. The team had been oblivious to the teeming life surrounding them, but even more disheartening was the fact that all the potential game, their source of sustenance, had bolted to another part of the forest. Panic intertwined with confusion, weaving a tapestry of fear and uncertainty that clung to them like a suffocating mask. While they waited out the passing aerial creature, its screeches echoing ominously under the forest canopy in the distance, Mr. Major sprang into action. Gathering rocks, sticks, and vines, he set about building a fire, a beacon of warmth and hope in this alien wilderness. His deft hands moved swiftly, braiding vines around a stone, a testament to his resourcefulness. As the fire crackled to life, Mr. Major took a moment to regain his energy, his thoughts focused on their next steps. His first concern was the wolves. "If they run into us again," he pondered aloud, "they might have new tactics. It's clear they've realized they underestimated us humans, and they won't make that mistake again. Another encounter with them would be the death of us, and they'd attack without hesitation. I'm sure of it. We no longer have the slime produced by the spunny eggs, and the slime on the clothes and on Toby are all dried up. Plus, we still don't know its exact effects on the wolves. A more sinister thought then crept into his mind. The dried-up slime could attract other spunnies in the area or some other creature that might find spunny eggs delicious. It was a chilling possibility. Once Mr. Major voiced his suggestion to abandon the tainted garments to avoid potential tracking by spunnies or unfamiliar creatures, the team reached a consensus. Discarding the clothing a few minutes away from their location would be the wise move to make. Meanwhile, Toby found himself lost in a whirlwind of uncertainty amidst the group's predicament. Questions swirled in his mind like autumn leaves caught in a tempest. Did he have a place in their desperate struggle, or would he be discarded along with the tainted garments? The wolves, the enigmatic spunny creatures, and the other unknown threats lurking in this alien forest weighed heavily on everyone's minds. Toby understood that his mere presence was a burden, a source of disappointment and an added layer of risk for his comrades. Yet despite the odds and the shadow of danger looming over them, Toby couldn't bring himself to abandon the team. The primal instinct for survival burned fiercely within him, an unquenchable desire to see another day, to see another sunny sky in this bewildering new world. His longing to explore this alien realm, a dream nurtured since childhood while watching ancient Discovery shows and animated classics, was a fire that refused to be extinguished. He had wished for this adventure for over 17 years, and now that it had come true, it was both a blessing and a curse. The irony was not lost on him. Here he was, facing the possibility of demise due to one of his favorite foods, eggs. It was a cruel twist of fate that left him questioning whether he was the protagonist in this surreal story or the unwitting pawn in some divine cosmic joke. Toby's willpower remained unbroken, a testament to his determination, even as his emaciated form seemed on the brink of dissolution, with muscles hanging on by a thread and skin pulled taut, the fragile barrier holding his body together. As the team scoured the area for small animals, plants, and fruit, time seemed to blur into an indistinct continuum. Dehydration was beginning to take its toll, their bodies slowly betraying the effects of their ordeal. They trudged through the cool, misty forest, seeking water and a peaceful spot to rest and recharge, the mysterious world around them shrouded in uncertainty. On the online shows back on Earth, in the comfort of their previous lives, survival and nature programs always emphasized the primal checklist: find water, kindle fire, erect shelter, and secure food. Yet they rarely touched on the challenge of locating abundant water sources within a jungle's depths. Discovering water was not the challenge. Instead, it was amassing enough in one go that proved nearly impossible. Water lurked like a well-kept secret throughout the forest, nestled in the creases and crevices of leaves and rocks, gathered in tiny, elusive pools. And then there was the conundrum of purification. The rock bowls they carved to use as pots would crack under the heat of boiling. All the rock options they tried, Timon was against using. And the leaves they tried to use broke as they tried to move them. Aware that the forest held lethal secrets, the team chose to gamble, reckoning that, at best, they could bolster their gut biome. Surprisingly, the water seemed to clash with Toby, reacting poorly with the slime that might or might not be poisoning him. Each sip of the tainted water left him bewilderingly intoxicated, his movements growing even more erratic as they continued their journey through the forest. Toby grappled with a conflicting impulse, torn between shedding his damp clothes and the lurking spunnies, fearful that nudity might render him defenseless, and yet aware that staying clothed could still lead the spunnies to them. Vigilance urged him to strip down, but his body resisted, an internal struggle that cast doubt on his abilities and weighed heavily on his conscience. He feared his own fears were hindering their progress, a nagging worry that without his timidity, they could find their way back or stumble upon sustenance. While walking behind the group, Toby's mind became a turbulent sea, wrestling with elusive thoughts. He felt an incessant inkling that the wolves were lingering in the shadows, not the entire pack, just a few solitary hunters patiently biding their time at a cautious distance. However, conveying this to others proved a challenge. The words that escaped his lips were jumbled, fragmented, and unintelligible. Recognizing Toby's unease and unwavering determination to persevere, the team adjusted their pace. They understood Toby's struggle and didn't mind him tagging along. The forest was an intimidating entity, a fact they could all agree on. Yet in Toby's case, his journey through the woods was marked by the unfortunate reality of his contamination. Their group journey provided a semblance of safety in numbers. They let Toby remain close, striking a delicate balance, near enough to shield him from potential assailants, yet far enough to avoid inadvertent contact. They carefully maintained distance, ensuring they were not in the trajectory of slime splatters as low-hanging branches swung and swayed in their path. After hours of meticulous exploration, Timon suddenly halted, his sharp clap of hands capturing the team's attention. He took a moment to express his gratitude and commend them for their unwavering trust amid the disorientation and uncertainty that shrouded their mission. Despite the perceived failure, Timon's determination to find sustenance and water remained unswayed. He drew connections between the alien environment and Earth, referencing Mr. Major's earlier observation about the forest's resemblance to trees found in South America and Africa. This glimmer of familiarity ignited hope within him, suggesting that tree-based sustenance, akin to familiar fruits from their homeland, might exist here. Perhaps the trees had adapted over time, evolving to yield their bounty higher in the canopy. Climbing these towering giants in search of sustenance was no small feat, with some of the trees reaching a minimum height of 30 meters. Timon infused his team with renewed determination, emphasizing the need to push forward through the forest, unraveling its mysteries step by step. As he spoke, Toby's uncontrollable coughing fit disrupted the moment, almost as if timed by an eerie force. Though irritation simmered beneath the surface of Timon's leadership, he remained composed, ready to assist Toby. However, the team held him back, their actions suggesting a different strategy or a cautious approach. Ben's watchful eye had noticed the telltale signs of Toby's deteriorating condition, the discoloration in his eyes and the cracks marring his skin. Concerned for Toby's well-being and aware of the absence of medical facilities in this alien world, even though it was common sense to stay away from Toby, he made sure to urge everyone to avoid physical contact with him. Citing the potential risk of transmitting the unknown alien illnesses was getting even higher by traveling with him. However, Ben was primarily concerned about the possibility of airborne contamination affecting them. Timon grasped the gravity of their situation, his resolve unwavering as he assured the team that they would continue onward. Time had become an elusive concept in the perpetual darkness of the forest. Since the jarring bird screech had jolted them from their slumber, Mr. Major attempted to keep track of time. He counted the hours diligently, but after 12 hours had passed, the forest's unchanging, shadowy landscape still felt like it had been merely 2 or perhaps 6 days. Who really knew that at this point? As they pressed on with their search, periodic calls and intermittent nap breaks further distorted their perception of time. After a seemingly endless 20 hours in the dark forest, he reluctantly abandoned the futile effort of counting the minutes and hours that slipped away. Ben, where is the sun? Why won't the canopy open up and share the sunlight? Don't plants need sunlight? How will the little bushes and plants survive down here on the forest floor? Mr. Major, how long has it been since we came here? I'm sure 16 hours have passed already, and people at the settlement must be thinking that the five of us are dead. I've been trying my best to keep track of time while awake, so that's an additional 20 hours. I think we've gone a full day at most in this forest. Toby, send help. Ben, shut up, Toby. They probably won't send help. We are lost. They do not know where we are or where we are going. They do not have the tools, equipment, or skills for a rescue mission. Mr. Major, he's right. This is real. Earlier, we talked about the good old days, but those are the past. We are lost in a forest on a planet that humans have no idea exists, lost in the universe. Scott, this really isn't a vacation that we can easily return from. We are as good as dead. What gives us the right even to think we could escape? Toby, cough, cough. So? No whispering in the forest bushes? We're done with that? Fuck stealth and caution? Mr. Major, dude, shut up. Ain't you dying? Blood is running from your eyes and ears. Timon, listen up, guys. I understand the fear and uncertainty we're facing. It's easy to give in to despair, but we cannot afford to lose hope. We've faced challenges before, like, do you remember those fucking wolves or the ugly-ass spunnies we just dealt with hours ago? Those were alien creatures, first of and lastly, wild animals. We survived that, and to be honest, we shouldn't have. But this won't be the last time we will be placed in situations like that. We've overcome this bitch once, and if we stick together and do our best, we might still die. But it will be together. We're a team, and we need to act like one to at least show this forest that we humans ain't no pushovers. Mr. Major, Timmons right. We've been through tough situations before, and we found a way. We need to stay focused, keep our wits about us, and work together to find a way out of this forest. Toby. But how? Scott. Exactly. We're surrounded by darkness, disoriented, and have no supplies. Ben. We need a better plan. We need to figure out where we're going, how we're going to sustain ourselves, taking chances with these nuts and berries and waiting for the trap to actually work and capture some meat. I wish one of you were gay. Gay people always know how to find meat. To be honest, the meat usually comes to them. But with all seriousness, how will we signal for help when the time comes? Who would see it and who would come to the rescue? Scott. Yo, you're the gayest of us all. Plus, I'm actually getting sick and tired of hearing you talk like this. Sex this, dick that. Does your personality exist around profanity and perversions? If it is, please just do your little magic trick real quick for us and secure the protein. We need that shit. Personally, to survive out here, all we need to do is watch out for each other. It's something my dad always said. We can't afford to lose anyone except maybe Toby. He's probably a zombie or something. He's already dead, Timon. Let's start by gathering any materials we can find in this forest that might help us signal for help and survive to see the sun at most. This much darkness cannot be healthy for the body and mind. I can already feel it. The darkness has been fucking with me. Mr. Major. Agreed. But don't just say let's get materials like we haven't been doing that this entire time. Let's make a map of our surroundings. I'm pretty sure somewhere among these tall and wide apartment-sized trees, I've spotted a birch tree somewhere. And I'm pretty sure in the military, we learned that the bark of that tree had been used on many occasions throughout human history to inscribe messages and record data. In our case, we can use it to mark any notable landmarks or signs that could guide us, even if it's just a map of this area. I've been watching our dear leader right in the dirt whenever he's not dig up rocks, and I'm not sure how he's been keeping notes, but if it's all mental, we won't be able to trust it completely. Timon, that makes sense to me. But then there's the problem of writing tools. Mr. Major, let's not jump too far ahead. We can scribe on things for now, then worry about ink and graphite later. Ben, we can take turns keeping watch while the others rest. Safety in shifts. Let's do it right this time around. However, I'm not taking watch first. Toby, who was clawing and pulling at his throat, said, openings, clearings, investigate, a way out. Ben, I'm amazed you can still talk, Toby. It looks like it's painful to think, let alone form words to push out of your mouth. Look at you. There's a big-ass vein running across your face from hairline to neck. I didn't even know veins like that existed in the face. Mr. Major. They don't. I think his body is failing him and is somehow changing to handle the trauma. That's my best guess. Scott. Let's stay positive and focused. We'll get through this. Not to jinx us or anything, but we've been doing fine so far. Let's just do the best we can to the best of our abilities, and I'm sure we can do this. Plus, Timon and Mr. Major's eyes for spotting the earth-like trees and plants will definitely be our saving grace. Ben. Hey, come and kiss my ass with recognition as well. I also can identify plants from Earth. Remember? I was the one who gave that fact about heart-shaped leaves. I'm that guy. Scott, how about you go and identify a healthy relationship? I've never known a polyamorous relationship to work. Ben, with a curious smile on his face, replied saying, Oh, Scott, I didn't know you cared that much about me and my life to have an opinion about it. Plus, where did you hear that from? I don't recall telling you about it. Why are you in my business? Do you want some dick? Come here, boy. Be a good boy and get over here. I have a treat for you. Come on. Don't be shy. Who's a good boy? Let me rub your tummy. I see how hard you've been working. All that scouting, and now it has led you to this bone. Scott, fuming with rage, held his tongue as the other gave a little laugh. Even Toby, who was in pain, couldn't help himself. As the night enshrouded the forest, the small fire crackled and popped, its flames casting a warm, reassuring glow amidst the shadows. Around it, the members of Team Uno sat in a silent, reflective huddle, each lost in their thoughts. The fire, with its flickering light, was a beacon in the darkness, a symbol of the fragile yet persistent hope that burned within their hearts. In the quiet of the forest, under a sky veiled by the canopy above, the team found a momentary respite from the relentless challenges they had faced. The trials of the day had tested their resolve, pushing them to the brink, yet here they were, together, alive, and determined to see another dawn.
Thank you for reading and listening to this chapter. See you next time on another episode of Chronicles of Meetum. Leave a comment and share your favorite parts of the story, your beloved characters, and your expectations for the next chapter. Your feedback will help fine-tune the upcoming episodes that I endeavor to write each month. Thanks for all the support, and I hope the next chapter will surpass all expectations.